Okay, it's still hot 90s. It's been hot for too long, way too long, and now we have to go through the month of August. Well, we shall do it. Headlines. The dollar's 10% slide is a warning that the U.S. has lost its grip on the virus. Well, you might say that now, mightn't you? Debbie Birx has gotten herself into a little controversy again. The epidemic is now out of control. There are a number of people saying that and subtitling it, Why Social Distancing and Face Masks Aren't Really Enough. And then there's a story about Jerry Kushner's coronavirus battle plan that he put together early on to help the Donald, and why it was dropped. Why? Because Jerry thought the virus was hitting Democrat blue states harder than red Republican states. This is true. Hard to believe. The White House is now reportedly requiring staff coronavirus testing after Donald Trump bashed the increased diagnostics that are being released now. Here's another one that goes into line with what I was particularly concerned about last week. Coronavirus survivors are now showing an increased rate of psychiatric disorders. Remember, because of the polybasic cleavage ability of this virus, it can attack all major body organ systems, and in this case, the brain, the heart, the liver, the kidneys, the lungs, you name it, digestive tract. Coronavirus survivors are now showing an increased rate of psychiatric disorders after, quote, recovering. Got another story. Think recovering from coronavirus is a breeze? Studies show many have long-term complications. I've been pounding on this. This issue is of great, great concern. I'm watching it very carefully. Now, we have a lot to discuss. I'll stop with the headlines right there. Let me take a quick peek. Here's one. Busiest Florida testing sites closed, and new coronavirus cases drop significantly. It's one of those, did that headline really just say that? Or was that Donald Trump talking? A hospital forgot to bill one of the female patients for her coronavirus test, so they sent her the bill. $1,980 for a coronavirus test. Not good. Not good at all. Okay, let's bring on Dr. Henry Nyman and get ready to start this week. I keep hoping that this thing is going to die down, but it's just getting to be worse and worse. The rest of the world seems to, in a large way, have come to grips with this and taken control of it. But the U.S. is like the Wild West for this virus. It's doing whatever the hell it wants to. It's really amazing to see. Hello, Henry. Welcome back.
Hi, Jeff. Good to be back. You're right about the rest of the world kind of getting things under control and totally out of control here. No real central, you know, plan. There's no plan, period. testing actually has gone down. You know, testing plummeted in Florida because of the hurricane, and especially in southern Florida. And,
right, I had to close up.
Most of the testing is, you know, done in tents, so they were going to leave the tents up with the winds coming. And so the number of cases reported by Florida went down quite a bit. And probably it's going to affect you know, other testing sites because it's making landfall right now in near the border, I think, of North and South Carolina. And it's going right up the coast. It's going to go, you know, right through Philadelphia all the way up to New York with tomorrow morning is supposed to still be going at 70 miles an hour, even though it's over land. Hmm.
Interesting.
And it's going to be gusting around 50 in Philadelphia, and it's going to be in that range in New York. So it's going to have
Henry's
a lot of
hurricane.
Trees down and power outages. Yeah, and some storm surge, and it's going to be messy, and it will affect testing, especially in those outdoor tents. It'll probably affect a lot of restaurants too, who are trying to set up shop outside, and tornado's not going to do them any favors either. But as far as the virus is concerned, it is still kind of churning away, both with deaths and with cases. Trump had another briefing today, really didn't say much new at all, gave a lot of statements, which, basically had put some distance between his statements and reality. And he's probably, and then there were none as far as scientists that are agreeing with him who are on his task force. So, as you mentioned, he pretty much threw Deborah Birx under the bus today on his tweets because she said that...
she's toast.
She said it was extraordinarily widespread and was affecting rural areas. And Girard basically shot down hydroxychloroquine over the weekend. And Fauci got attacked already the last couple of weeks. And so there's really nobody left. So it's Trump, Dr. Trump, he definitely... I said he didn't know the difference between a pandemic and epidemic, and he actually said that today. He said, well, sometimes it's a pandemic, sometimes an epidemic. It's got a lot of different names. He really doesn't know the difference between the two, which is part of the reason he thought that the pandemic would disappear, which pandemics do not do. Epidemics disappear. And so he has still... misunderstandings at the most basic level. He has no idea what is going on. He's waving his hands and said the U.S. is doing as well as any nation in controlling the virus. They're number one in we're number one in the world with deaths and cases. And when comparisons are made to Europe on how they've got down close to baseline, he says, oh, that's because of testing, which is nonsense. I mean, Europe does their share of testing. Some of his BFFs, which like Brazil, might under-test. And Russia would undercount the deaths. They would say, well, they had COVID and they're dead, but they probably died of something else. So they get doctors to basically say, well, this diagnosis doesn't really match, ignoring the fact that there's not that much known about the virus and the different causes and the different, effects of the assault on various organ systems, like you mentioned. So Trump, basically said the virus was under control. We're doing well. We made significant progress, and the virus was receding. And its main point was time to open up the schools. There are problems in all of those areas. Just as a quick recap, weekends are always lower, but and today really gives the results from yesterday. And so between the weekend and the And the hurricane, the numbers are down a little bit, but today there were over 50,000 new cases. Yesterday it was 42,000. On Saturday it was 61,000. And Friday it was 67,000, actually almost 68,000. And Friday there were 1,400 deaths. Saturday 1,100. That day there were only 362, but like I said, partially because Florida wasn't reporting anything. And actually, Texas didn't report on Sunday either. They said they would hold off and reported today. And so today there were 589 deaths. And It'll be over 1,000 by tomorrow, maybe getting back closer to that 1,400 number. This is what it got up to last week. And we're kind of closing in on a couple milestones again on the deaths. The world
Henry, may I interrupt here? I'm going to go back to Trump for a minute. You made an interesting point. You said there's nobody left. This is really, again, and I don't mean to belabor this, this is taking on all the signs and symptoms of a Shakespearean tragedy. If you remember, Othello slowly went mad, accused everybody around him of cheating on him with Desdemona, his wife, eventually ended up killing her, and then killed himself. This is really not a normal kind of a screenplay we're watching. This is really dark and dreary, and you're right. He doesn't have many left to go after. He's running out of at least easily accessible enemies to blame. And I don't think this is going to have a good ending for some reason. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I said a long time ago that he was really anti-science, and his science team could kind of placate him, to a certain level, but he basically is anti-science, and his statements are, I mean, he's still looking for this magical kind of solution. Either the virus is going to disappear on its own, or hydroxychloroquine is going to be the miracle drug. And he does say that there'll be a vaccine, so he does keep that open. He doesn't say there's not going to be anything in addition. But right now, he went back to the hydroxychloroquine. He's attacked Fauci, said they had disagreements, and insists that the comparisons of the cases to the rest of the world is because the U.S. tests a lot and the rest of the world doesn't. And there's a few countries that are certainly, you could make an argument that they don't test enough and there's undercounts. But there are rules, there are numbers to tell you whether you're testing enough or not. I mean, the CDC says you should have your positive rate below 5%. If it's above 5%, you're really not testing enough. And, some of these states had positives in the 20% range, meaning there are a lot more cases that were being identified. And the U.S. has kind of maxed out its testing. The national labs are having major delays and making the tests kind of useless. And there have been cutbacks on testing. The test number of tests run peaked about 10 days ago or so. So the testing has gone down. And confirmed cases will go down with that. That it doesn't mean the cases went away. It just meant that the reported cases or the confirmed cases is lower. So if you don't test, then obviously you won't get any confirmed cases. But that doesn't mean you don't have any cases. The virus doesn't care whether you test or not. You know, it just goes about its merry business. Mm-hmm. And he loves it. They love it when it don't test, because then you're essentially flying blind. You have no idea where the virus is. You're not going to do any contact tracing. You don't even know where you have a problem, that you're going to get another explosion of cases. And that's what Deborah Birx is saying, that it's widespread. It's in rural areas. It's starting to take off in the Midwest now, so the South might get a little bit better, but the Midwest is going to get a lot worse.
Uh-huh.
And the big explosion is going to come with school. I mean, CDC put out an early release MMWR on Friday, and it was. You know, you had to kind of look at it. Usually when they put out these MMWRs, they kind of have a result and a discussion. And this was just a running commentary. It just kind of ran through the facts, bang, 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 says this is a major problem. And here you go. Mm-hmm. And basically the major problem was a overnight camp in Georgia. It was actually run by the YMCA, and they had something like, 35 cabins with about 15 campers in each cabin. And, you know, they met the specifications to go to the camp. You had to bring a test result showing you were negative for COVID. The counselors wore masks, but masks were optional for the campers. So, you know, obviously most of the campers did not wear masks. They were about 15 per cabin, so it was fairly, you know, there was no social distancing in those cabins. And they did a lot of singing and shouting in the cabin, which would facilitate the spread of the virus. And the cabins basically didn't have good ventilation. And about a day into the camp, somebody was symptomatic, and they were tested. They were positive. And then they said, camp's over. So they shut down the camp. The total time the camp was open, I think, was 4 days. I think the part of that was before the campers arrived. That was for the counselors. And
I think 4 days was it. Thank you, right?
Yeah. Oriented. And then they basically said, you know, go home and get tested. And then they kind of looked at the names on the roster, and then they looked at the tally of who was tested and who was positive and who wasn't. And they had something like 300, a little over 300 actually were verified that they were tested. And 76% of those tested were positive. So the virus ran through that camp like wildfire. And, you know, the majority of those tested were positive. It was 44% of all of the campers, but, you know, a good percentage of those probably weren't tested. They didn't know for sure because not all negatives are reported. And so they thought that there might have been more tested than they actually had results on it, but that they were negative. So, you know, the penetration was somewhere between 44 and 76%, but it didn't really matter. It basically said that, you know, these campers were not immune, as Trump would say, and there is no problem with the virus spreading pretty dramatically. in a very short time period. And the idea of the camp was a pretty silly idea, to think that they don't need masks. They're going to go in these cabins, 15 to a cabin. They're going to sit around and sing songs and yell and shout, and everything will be hunky-dory in Georgia, which is getting thousands of cases a day, and is certainly not under control. Even Trump criticized them for opening up too soon. And, Georgia's not in a good place. Florida's not a good place. Texas isn't a good place. Trump thinks they're doing fine. And these guys are signaling what it's going to be like when school opens. That when school opens, they're going to be in for a shock. Actually, they're already seeing the shocks, because some schools are already opening and they're already closing. And they're closing because I think they've got one or two positives. And that's the basis for closing. They're all going to be closed within a week after opening, because the virus is widespread. You can't open the schools with this level of virus. They don't really have a point-of-care kind of testing. The testing is limited. It takes time to get results back. And, you know, there's a lot of those that go to school that go back to households that have multiple generations. So they're going to have parents there. They're going to have grandparents there. In some of the cases, the grandparents look after the kids after school because their parents are working. Some of the teachers are, you know, susceptible. They're in their 50s or 60s, or they have underlying conditions. And they're not going to be thrilled about, you know, on-site teaching.
Did you see the story that some of the teachers, I've forgotten which state now, but a number of teachers were actually filling out their wills, last will and testament, before going back to the classroom? No kidding.
Right. And they were naming the governor as executor or something so that he would get all the notices. Yeah. They know it's not a good situation. Some of the principals are just sitting there and saying, this is crazy. They know that they're going to have teachers that die. They know that children are going to go home and cause their parents or grandparents to die. They know there are going to be deaths. They know that this is a bad idea. And they're trying to figure out how to mitigate it and minimize the number of seriously ill or death cases. And even if those seriously ill are not the students themselves, but they're the parents or grandparents of the students, they're still going to know that the reason that parent or grandparent died is because they decided to try to open
the schools. We've got to look at this. Go ahead. I got something I want to put in here. Go ahead. Finish up.
It's just nonsense. I mean, here in Western Pennsylvania, they announced today they're moving back the sports two weeks for opening up season. The only one that's opening on time, I think, is the golf. But all the fall sports have been pushed back into September now. They usually start playing at the end of August. And so I think September 10th is the start date. But, you know, I don't think the September 10th date is going to hold up, because they're going to start practicing in earnest. And they're going to do just what I described, you know, last week, where, you know, they did fever checks. And, you know, 10 days later, all of a sudden, there was this big explosion in number of cases reported for the suburban high schools, or at least the suburban areas that where the suburban high schools are. And I'm virtually positive those explosions all came from The fever checks. They did the fever checks. They had a fever. They had the they were tested. I wouldn't be surprised if the school offered the testing so that they all basically submitted samples the same time, and they all got results at the same time, and they all showed up on the map of Allegheny County at the same time, and they were all concentrated in the northern suburbs. And that would indicate, I mean, this school district here, with the areas to feed into that school district, there were 30 cases in one day. And I'm virtually positive that at least 20 of those 30 are athletes. And that's how many who showed up on the first day of testing. And they're going to be practicing. And by the time they get around to the first day of school, I'm not sure exactly what they're going to do, whether they're going to try to set up some type of testing, whether they're going to do fever checks for everybody coming in the door. I mean, I saw them lined up today, and I'm almost positive they were lined up for physicals, because usually they go to the doctors to get a physical so they can play sports. And you know, the doctors don't want to see them, so they're basically all getting their physicals at school, at the gym. And so they were lined up. Everybody was wearing masks. Everybody was trying to maintain. They weren't maintaining 6 feet, I can tell you. They were maintaining maybe 2 or 3 feet. And they were getting ready to go in and get their physical. Some would probably get infected getting their physical. And they're given another 2 or 3 weeks of practice, and by the time they get around to opening up school,
Yeah. They're
not going to have one or two positives. They're going to have 10 or 20 positives.
Yeah.
And the teachers are going to take a look at that and say, you know, this makes no sense. If you're going to have 20, 30 positives walking in the door on day one,
right,
there's no way you're going to control this with or without masks, and it's just going to be a disaster, and you're going to end up with all these kids going, you know, developing the virus, taking it home. Then the parents are not going to be happy. They're going to say, well, I think we made the wrong choice when we opted for the classroom. We should have just done the virtual. And they're going to want to switch, and the teachers are going to say, this is a war zone. You know, this is crazy. We went and we did it, mm-hmm, you know, virtual in the spring, and there's really no reason to start the fall doing this, because mm-hmm, there's a lot more virus now in the fall than there was,
okay,
in the spring.
All right, transition.
Okay.
We've got stories, a number of them, that are stating that factual scientific testing is indicating that antibodies among those who have been infected and recovered are gone in about 90 days. They're just gone.
Right.
The body doesn't,
right,
seem to be able to hold an immunity. Now, with, right, with the virus clearly not going to go away, and second infections on the horizon for a lot of people, what is your guess as a professional, a scientist, about a second infection in someone who has survived it the first time but has no antibodies left? Some are suggesting that the virus might be more vengeful and wicked the second time around for reasons I don't understand. Here's the bottom line, though. This virus isn't apparently going to go away. So we're going to, perennially,
right,
until they come up with something. And I don't think vaccine is necessarily the answer, but we're looking at a chronic issue that is,
right,
not going to abate.
Right. This is a pandemic, not an epidemic. And just to clarify again, you know, conceptually, when you have an epidemic, that means it's a localized outbreak.
Right.
And the reason it's an epidemic is because the virus hasn't really gained the ability to just spread everywhere. So it's limited, and it typically does go away. And part of the reason it goes away is, you know, there's contact tracing and there's quarantining, and the virus doesn't get a chance to keep on spreading. And it doesn't spread that efficiently, so it gets under control. And SARS is a good example of that. I mean, the international spread was largely traced to a single individual who went to the Metropole Hotel, infected a bunch of tourists, that took it to a bunch of major cities around the world, and then it didn't really get out of those major cities. And some of them, like Hanoi, got under control in a matter of a few weeks, and some of them, like Toronto, took a few months. But it ended up getting under control, and it ended up getting under control in China, and it kind of did go away by May or June. And then it kind of came back in the fall, and then they hopped on it quickly in Hong Kong, and it kind of got under control. The intermediate host was a lot of times civet cats or wet markets, and they did a lot of culling and cleaned up those wet markets. And basically the virus went away. It did disappear. But the numbers are nothing like the numbers are now. I mean, then the total number of confirmed cases was under 8,000, and the total number of dead was, under 800. And it was controlled, and that's an epidemic, and it kind of disappeared. This is a pandemic, and just to give you, I mean, the U.S. is coming up on a couple of milestones. The Worldometer has got the number of cases now up to 4,862,000. So going to hit the 5 million mark in a couple of days. There's 60, 70,000 cases a day during the week. It goes down on the weekend. And the number of deaths is 158,929. So it's just about 159,000. So we should hit 160,000 tomorrow, at the latest the day after tomorrow. So it's going to hit another milestone. It was 150,000 not that long ago. And if it goes up 1,500 a day, it doesn't take that long. In a week, a little over a week, because it goes down on the weekends. But in 10 days, essentially, it goes up another 10,000. So it's 160, and in a month, it'll be getting close to 200,000. Before election time, it'll be 200,000 dead. And it's not going to stop because it's election time. It's going to keep right on rolling. And 300,000 by the end of the year is not an unreasonable number. And 300,000 would be, that would beat 1918 as far as the number of deaths. So it's a major pandemic, and it's pretty much out of control. And Trump thinks he can talk it down and tell people it isn't that bad, but he's ignoring the fact that it's moving into new areas. And, well, it's been in the new areas, but it's starting to expand dramatically in those new areas. And with the upcoming holiday and the start of school, that's just going to juice everything up, kind of like what happened with the swine flu pandemic. With the swine flu pandemic, it did the same thing. It started in the spring. It was kind of spotty. A lot of the outbreaks were traced back to spring break and college students and high school students basically bringing the virus back to their schools, the spread in the schools. But it was spotty. It spread enough to be declared a pandemic in the spring, but it didn't really get going till school opened up. And as far as being infected twice, I mean, here, I would characterize that as exactly what happened. Because when the school season started here in Pittsburgh, the kids initially just had a cough and symptoms, but they weren't sick enough to go home. They weren't sick enough to get a high temperature, and they weren't sick enough to go to the doctor. So it went, I asked my kids what's going on, because I knew the virus was going to be coming here. And they said, are kids coughing? I said, yeah, they're coughing, but they're, they all got whatever crud is going around, and they cough for a little bit, and they aren't that sick, and they don't, they don't miss school, and they kind of fight their way through it. And all these kids coughing, I think, was mild swine flu, and they didn't get that sick the first time they were infected. And then 6 weeks later, in October, there was a second wave. It really started in earnest. The kids had fevers. They were lined up at the nurse's office. They were being sent home. My absentee levels were 10-15% with the students, 10-15% with the teachers. And the kids were sick enough to go to the doctor. They got diagnosed. I mean, I had a daughter, same thing. I mean, I know exactly when she got infected. It was at a soccer game. It was, 35, 40 degrees out, steady rain. They were all on the sidelines underneath this plastic tent. And the next day she was coughing. 2 days later she went to the doctor. She had 101 temperature, did a nasal pharyngeal swab. Next day she was up to 103 temperature. Started her on Tamiflu. It took about a week to get kind of confirmed.
I remember when this happened, Henry, because you were on the program back then. We were covering this. Right. I remember.
Right, because she was sick on. I mean, I remember blow by blow. I was immediate contact in the stats, so I was on the side, with the team. And went to the game on Saturday, and there's always two parents for home games. It was a home game, and the other parent that was sitting next to me was coughing away. I said, what are you thinking? She was a doctor, and she says, I don't know, I got whatever my daughter has. I said, what do you think she has? She says, I don't know, she's coughing a lot. I said, what are you taking for it? She said Tamiflu. So, I mean, she knew what she had. I knew what she had. And I knew what her daughter had.
Sure.
And that afternoon, I started coughing. And I had it
what
by
a nice
Sunday.
Gift.
I couldn't stop coughing. And, I could have got it from my daughter, too. I mean, my daughter was positive. Then my wife and other daughter got infected a couple of days later. So, I mean, it went through the household. And, and it went through the school, and so the idea that you can get infected twice, I think that was common, except with the swine flu, most of the people that got infected the first time never got tested because they weren't that sick. And it was the second one that got them sick enough, so they had a high enough fever that they did get tested. I mean, it didn't last that long. My daughter actually went back to class, I think, on Monday. And she basically, I don't know if it was Tamiflu or what, but I mean, she definitely didn't have symptoms by Monday and was back in class. And I think that was fairly common. The kids missed a couple days of school and they ended up recovering fairly quickly. And I think the same thing is going to happen with COVID, that people, the first time they get it, it's not necessarily that bad. There's a thing called antibody enhanced disease, where the antibodies that you have from the first one actually facilitate the entry of the virus into cells. So the virus actually is more virulent the second time you have it.
So that's not a good indicator. is it?
Right, right. And I suspect that is exactly what's going to happen. So in the fall, you're going to have people that have been infected in the spring, and they don't have that much antibody left. And some people might have been infected over the summer, and they do have some antibody left. But if the virus changes a little bit, the antibody is not that effective at eliminating the virus. And in fact, it does just the opposite. It basically allows the virus to more easily infect cells, and you end up with a more severe disease. And
this
is not good.
We're going to have a very bad fall and winter. I'm sorry.
That's why a lot of scientists have been saying this all along. They don't expect it to just disappear. I mean, the swine flu is still around. The swine flu never went away. I mean, people got enough immunity to it so that it's not quite as severe. But and it depends what age you are, because it was H1N1. So those who had H1N1 in their childhood basically did better with the swine flu than younger adults who hadn't seen it, because H1N1 kind of disappeared. Well, it didn't disappear. It was replaced by H2N2 in 57, and that was replaced by H3N2 in 68. And so it kind of changed, and it got evolved and changed some of the components. But but swine flu is still around today. I mean, it started in 2009, and the same virus that entered the human population in 2009 is still circulating in 2020, and it did eliminate the seasonal H1N1. The seasonal H1N1 is gone, but it was gone because it got beat out by swine H1N1. So swine H1N1 is still in circulation today. It circulates today, and seasonal H1N1 is gone. But that's essentially what happens when the virus becomes the pandemic and is able to infect the world and is widespread like that. It doesn't disappear. It may, for flu, it's seasonal. So in the summer, it goes down, and then it comes back in the fall. And that's in part because it's somewhat temperature dependent. And the virus has evolved so that it replicates well when it's a little bit cooler. Its optimal temperature is 33 degrees centigrade. So that's kind of, what your nose is like in the winter. It's cooler. It's dropped from 37 degrees body temperature down to 33. And the virus can grow more quickly because the polymerase is adapted for that temperature. And you end up with more virus and more flu during flu season in the fall and the winter. And it comes back every season. It doesn't disappear. Yeah. And it's likely that the same thing will happen with COVID. It's a cold virus. There are milder versions that have been around for years. There were newer ones that were identified as a result of SARS that mostly affect children, and those have been around. They were identified because they had the probes and they could measure them, but they didn't go away. They're still around. So these other cold viruses, they don't really produce severe disease, but they do give you a cold. Are still circulating. I mean, some were identified in the 60s. These other more recent ones were identified after SARS, so they were identified in like 2003, 2004, or 2004, 2005, probably. And they're still around. And so these viruses, once they get established in a new host, And in some of these cases, they weren't being established in the new host. They were just being identified in the new host because they had probes that could test for them. They hang around, and in the case of SARS-CoV-2, you know, they've got that polybasic cleavage site, so they're able to infect more cell types, and they're fairly virulent, and you know, older people with underlying conditions are particularly susceptible, and so there's no indication it's going to go away on its own, and there's no real plan. For attacking it is still kind of the same thing. There's you know, there's not enough test kits available. The numbers are going up. Actually, in South America, I mean, Brazil is out of control, and then neighboring countries now have high levels. Mexico's getting high levels now, and you know, even though they're getting high levels, they still aren't where the U.S. is. The U.S. is still leading. And the indications are that it's really not going to slow down. The indications are it's going to new areas, so it's starting to show up in the Midwest. They got this this bikers convention up in South Dakota.
Sturgis.
Yeah, 250,000 they're expecting.
Right.
So, you know, what's that going to do? We were thinking about calling it off, but, you know, it brings in $250 million to the local economy. So, you know, we decided that, well, it's going to happen no matter if we said we didn't want it or not. So we'll go ahead and have it.
Plus, it's the 80th anniversary of the Sturgis rally. 80.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, you put 250,000 people in one place, even if they spend most of the day riding around on a motorcycle, they're still going to get together afterwards. And
That's understood.
They're going to spend $250 million, and it's not just on gas. You know, they're going to be, you know, going to, you know, eating and whatever kind of entertainment and organization, you know, group activities, and they're gonna, you know, bikers aren't the best ones to wear masks. So, you know, the virus is gonna spread. They're gonna bring it, you know, from all parts of the country. They're gonna concentrate it in South Dakota, and South Dakota doesn't have that much activity. So there's no major lockdowns or anything. So people are pretty much free to do whatever they want. And, you know, to a degree, I don't know exactly, you know, what they're going to do about this type of crowd, but they're probably not going to control it very well. And like I say, the biggest explosion is going to come from the school, because the schools are, you know, the whole idea that Trump says that, you know, students are immune. Number one, nobody has said that the teenagers are immune, and teenagers are included in who's supposed to go back to school. I mean, the high schools are definitely going to be transmitting the virus, and if they do start playing sports, the contact sports are going to spread the virus, and it's going to spread the virus in the preseason. Just getting ready and practicing is going to start spreading the virus around. I mean, these football players aren't wearing masks, and they're in close contact, and they're huffing and puffing, and you know, the virus is just going to go through those football teams. Like, yeah, and you already see it in the sports teams. I mean, the baseball's having all kind of problems. First they had the Marlins, now they got the Cardinals. They got something like 7 players that are positive.
Yeah.
And the NFL's never going to get off the ground. I mean, they might play, you know, 3 or 4 games, and they're going to have all kinds of issues. Those teams have too much contact. There's too many players on the team to have any any real possibility that they're going to be able to control the virus, and they play in the fall. So the level of virus is going to go up. It's not going to stay away from the football teams. And the idea that they're going to have football games in this fall is a pipe dream. Like I said, three or 4 weeks, and everybody will be shut down. So
Brady, you're right.
That's kind of where things stand. Tomorrow we'll get more of a typical number on how many cases we have, and see how much flattening's going on and how much expansion is happening in the Midwest. It's not going to be great. We'll give an update tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, Henry.
Okay.
All right.
Take care.
You bet. Yeah. You're getting as good of an honest scientific overview of this as we're going to get with Dr. Nyman. And we got a pretty good selection of stories. We cover both sides of the mask issue. The Danes have repeated today that they don't think masks are worth the time. So there's still an argument there. However, if I knew someone were sick and they were shedding lots of virus, I would want them to wear a mask. So it's really a very simple solution, I think, for most people. It's a practical solution. All right. Be back with you tomorrow night. Take care. Talk soon.